Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Receiving this message.
We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
You have accessed entry 539.EP0607, certificate number 21182, the Goodwill Games.
The 1986 Goodwill Games, the world's premier sports spectacular, live from Moscow, July 5th through the 20th. The greatest athletes from the United States, the Soviet Union, and around the world will compete to determine the very best.
I don't want to alarm you, John, but are you aware that the Olympics are in crisis? How many times a day do you think about the crisis in the Olympic movement?
Well, it's funny because a month ago I would say it's a not negligible number of times a day.
You mean because we're recording this in the spring and the Winter Olympics just happened?
Yes.
Did you watch any of the Beijing games?
I did, although as is probably true of you, I found it hard to find a way to watch the games. And I guess when we were kids and they were just on television and that was your option, it was way easier. You knew when they were on and you watched them.
You didn't need a Peacock login?
And now it was just one login after another. We tried to watch it on YouTube and it was, the interfaces were so confusing. It wasn't clear what the schedule was even. And
you just gave up and watched the Jeopardy National College Tournament.
Eventually, yes. Eventually, I gave up. And, you know, I'm a downhill skier, and I love watching the downhill skiing. There are a lot of new sports within that sport, freestyle and all the snowboarding. And
how many ways are there to ski down a hill? Come on.
Apparently, a lot. And
when I was a kid, we only had regular G. Now there's Super G. That's way more G.
I was a ski racer when Super G was introduced. And we were all really excited by it because it did. Because
you just had original recipe G.
It did fill a gap, you know. And I was good at Super G because I was big and I could go fast. But downhill is terrifying. It is a terrifying sport. You're going so fast and you're so out of control. Really out of control.
But I feel like not well conveyed on TV for those of us who are not downhill skiers.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know if I really sense the... when I see somebody skiing downhill, I guess I remember a clip where somebody's absolutely got to like have the best run of his life. And so he's taking all these chances and you can tell it's very precarious. But in general, if it's not the ski jump, I'm like, he's just getting to the bottom.
The ski jump is actually safer, I'm sure.
Really?
By a long shot. I mean, I think the gold medal winner in any downhill event is going at the very edge of what you can do. But Super G is like, feels more in control. It feels more like, I don't know, it just felt like a more badass sport.
But I'm telling you, if you don't know the sport, if you don't have the muscle memory of the wind in your hair,
yeah,
you're just watching. You're just watching Swedes go down mountains. It's not visceral for us.
When I was in high school, I was racing downhill, and one of my skis pre-released, and I didn't know it. And it just means that the ski came off.
That's embarrassing. Oh, like it actually came off the boot?
No. The ski went away because I was making a big turn and I'm only on one ski, right? I'm on the...
Pre-release seems like a nice way to say that.
Oh, yeah. It is a euphemism. But I was on one ski and my other ski came off and I was so focused, you know, on my line that I didn't notice. And then when I went to change
that foot,
when I went, to make the next turn, my boot went into the snow and I cartwheeled
if you could have done the whole thing on one ski, if you had known,
I would have kept going. No, it was a real yard sale and I ended up, you know, it was only a tree that stopped me from continuing down the hill, which is not the best. You know, that's what killed Sonny Bono.
That same tree?
Same tree.
That's crazy.
It goes from resort to resort.
That's my bucket list is to wipe out into the same tree that killed Sonny Bono. No. I hope they put that tree down the way they do when a wolf or a bear eats a man.
Nope, it runs. It's the fastest tree in the West. But anyway, I had a very frustrating time watching the Olympics. And you know, and I love the competitive figure skating. Everybody's so talented now and just so over the top. But I couldn't bear the difficulty. I mean, I couldn't get through the...
You're a man of a certain age and you want rabbit ears.
I just want to see the Olympics, you know, like show me the Olympics every night. Don't make me go through all this dumb stuff.
But there are a lot of problems in getting, the time zones alone are always a challenge nowadays. You know, in the past, the network could just put something on that was 16 hours old and you'd have no idea if you were seeing live volleyball or not.
Right.
Today, everyone's aware that, you know, they saw those results on their phone, you know, at 6 a.m.
But, you know, you kind of don't care. Like, who cares who wins? You want to see the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. I mean, we come from an era where nobody did care. But I think people today might care more. Like, isn't something lost for you when you already know the Americans are not going to medal here?
People want to see the results these days. And I think results mattered to us. It was always fun to be surprised.
You want long clip packages about whose mom has overcome cancer.
Well, but and I want to see the favored... you know, the favored competitor lose because I, you know, want to know why, like what happened? How did they balk?
Common American complaint about all the storylining that the American networks do. Have you heard people say, oh, just here's how you pirate BBC or CBC. Use some kind of proxy server.
And, you know, I'm already behind 6 proxies.
Well, then you can easily see the personality-less, no adoption or cancer story, Canadian version of the Olympics. But that's what I like. I'm like, oh, that guy's adopted? Oh, now I want him to win.
The problem with being behind 6 proxies for me is that I can't log into my computer anymore. I don't know how to get there. It's behind, you know, I get through 5 proxies and I can't get through the 6th.
You're screaming at your Mac, I'm a sovereign citizen. You were not alone. Many people could not find the Beijing Olympics or did not care to. Ratings were at an all-time low.
Yeah.
The Winter Olympics have structurally always been a bit of a problem for the Olympic movement.
Which I hate. It's so infuriating. What is so good about running that it's better than, you know, than people risking their lives on a half pipe?
The big sports that Americans pay good money to watch, like...
Javelin,
basketball, golf, and tennis. These are all summer sports.
That sucks.
And well, the problem is not really us because you know Americans actually in general do like to watch hockey and
luge,
curling, and like you say, figure skating. I mean, these can be big record nights, especially if one of the skaters has just hit the other skater with a 2x4.
Yeah, well, and we're trying a record. You know what? It's because we're still trying to defeat the Russians.
Yeah.
Hockey, figure skating.
I mean, relative to Canadians, we do not care about all these frigid sports. Relative to the Finns, we're probably a little apathetic. We'd rather watch the Super Bowl. But in general, like the Winter Olympics are not a hard sell for us. But unfortunately, it's a problem in the Olympic movement because half the countries of the world don't.
Oh, I mean, see.
You know, there's like 9 countries that actually have the facilities to host this stuff. Right. And literally 100 countries that don't play them, don't field teams. Don't care.
But you remember when the Italian curling team
You can stop that sentence now because no, I do not. I don't know what they did. Unless their plane crashed in the Andes and they had to eat each other. I do not remember what the Italian curling team
The did. Italians won the gold in mixed doubles in curling.
Was this an insane upset?
It's incredible. I didn't even know the Italians had... I mean, I'm a fan of curling. I did not know the Italians could field a curling team. But then you realize, you know, the Italians have a northern alpine... Sure. Part of
all those guys up by Milan and Torino and Pisa,
yeah,
just sweeping big gnocchi across the ice.
But they beat Norway.
Is this the Jamaican bobsled team of curling?
It is, and I watched it. You know, I was avid, and of course, you know, they're Italian, so they're very attractive. You know, and it's not that I don't think Norwegians are attractive, but you don't, you know, you're not expecting like Italians because they were, you know, they were throwing pizza and stuff. Yeah, what Italians do?
It was like Sofia Loren.
That's a mozzarella.
Were they really saying that?
No. They were very dignified.
What if every time they had a good little curling push or sweep, whatever you call it, they were like, "That's a spicy meatball."
But I was thrilled. It was an upset and you wouldn't think, but you're absolutely right. It's hard to have a Winter Olympics in Egypt.
Even, you know, these particular Olympics were more trouble than even your regular low audience, low appeal Winter Olympics, you know, with all the structural logistical difficulties of trying to put on a Winter Games in a world that largely does not care about winter sport. And they couldn't find anybody to host it.
Oh,
the only two cities are increasingly resistant to putting together Olympic bids because the taxpayer always takes it on the chin, particularly the Winter Olympics, which tend to cost about as much as a summer with a fraction of the TV contract size and viewership.
It's funny because cities seem really anxious to give $800 million to a football stadium.
To get a new, you got to get a new stadium. But again, that all gets passed on to the taxpayer as well. Even though the billionaire that owns the team could easily pick up the tab.
The thing that's funny is that after the original Olympics in Athens, there was no Olympics that wasn't in either Northern Europe or the United States until the Tokyo Olympics. And then all Northern Europe.
Tokyo's what, 64?
Well, no, the first one, I guess there
was. Oh, the one that got canceled.
The one that got canceled.
Got it.
And so then it was the United States and Northern Europe until 64 in Tokyo. And then, Mexico City in 68. That introduced the idea that it could be anywhere but in Garmisch-Partenkirchen or Lake Placid. I mean,
that's exactly the idea, that sports happen in places like Grenoble that could have a Winter Olympics.
Right, but then, so we've got Korea.
Why would you go someplace exotic like Tokyo or Mexico City when you could have an Olympiad in St. Louis, Missouri? John, right here where we live, in St. Louis.
So the only Olympics ever... not in the Northern Hemisphere, was in Brazil.
There was, are you counting Melbourne and Sydney? Melbourne? Oh, we get in trouble when we don't say Melbourne.
You're absolutely right.
Melbourne 56 was the first Southern Hemisphere
one. The Anzac ones, but you know, you kind of...
Who wants a Summer Olympics in January anyway? Come on, Melbourne.
Give me a break.
But yeah, like as far as Global South Olympics, not so much. Never been one in Africa.
Nope.
Rio's the only one in south of Mexico City, I guess.
Never been one really in Central Asia, Southeast Asia.
Not a single Antarctic Olympics.
No. Nope.
There was very.
You'd think India would be able to host an Olympics quite successfully.
There was very nearly a Central Asian Olympics just now. Of the two bids for the 2022 Winter Olympics. One was from Almaty, Kazakhstan, the major city of Kazakhstan, which again, unstable dictatorship, just kind of trying to do a ego trip.
Yeah.
And China, Beijing, China, stable dictatorship working on an ego trip. Mm-hmm. And so nobody was thrilled about giving a Winter Olympics to Beijing, a city that has neither snow nor mountains.
Right. But they're capable of building fake mountains.
That's the thing. Fake mountains, fake snow. The question is who can put in just... you know, $13 billion worth of infrastructure to have a luge track that nobody's going to use. Nobody's going to use. You know, that's why.
I beg your pardon. Year round luge is one of my. It's so ridiculous even to say.
You're a big YRL fan. But I mean, have you seen the pictures of like the. I mean, Sarajevo is a particular case because that's a luge track that got bombed. But in general, the world is full of overgrown Olympic facilities because. nobody, you know, no country not in, you know, eight cities worldwide needs to put that much money into its skating rink infrastructure.
Yeah, I feel like up at Whistler, there's a luge track that gets used, but I think it might get used for mountain biking.
Pyeongchang, South Korea does not need high-speed rail, and yet they have it today because all this infrastructure had to go in to host 110 countries or whoever comes to the Winter Olympics. So it's less appealing for cities. Ratings are down for various reasons, including in this case, the host. You know, the West was not particularly excited to see China, kind of a newly belligerent and insular, and Taiwan threatening China shake its fist on the world stage.
Although China hosted it in 2008.
But a very different vibe. That was kind of a seemingly more open Chinese Communist Party. This was the beginning of something.
They did a lot of synchronized dancing to open the show.
And let's admit China's as good as synchronized dancing today as it was in 2000. Every bit as good.
Yeah.
But the climate of the party seems very different.
Yeah,
tensions
quite
are
right.
Higher.
And why hasn't Seattle ever hosted a Winter Olympics? We'd be perfect for it.
We are going to, I mean, are we though? All that wet pass, all that wet snow, 90 miles right. Away.
I've only ever skied on super wet snow, so I don't remember that it's so different in the mountains.
The real problem with the Beijing Games was the doping.
Yes.
Russia had to field some kind of quasi not Russian team just because they had been peeing through holes in walls for years to get around regulations.
And somehow even their fake team was full of dope.
Oh, absolutely. They still had somebody, they still had the same glory hole technology that got them here. But for pee in this case.
Yeah, sure.
Glory holes, but for pee is what is the technical term.
Although I think in New York in the 70s, you could have found those too.
And it all depends on what you're into. So between all the scandals and all the kind of logistical problems that are now starting to rear their heads and just shrinking TV ratings for everything.
Do you think that there's less interest in nations competing against one another?
I think that's absolutely what it is. You know, it's the same problem as when TV went from three things on to 100 things on. You know, when you wake up in a world where you are told as received wisdom that the Olympics are the biggest thing, that's our childhoods. And we watched every event and we were so excited.
Leroy Neiman painted placemats at McDonald's.
Like Leroy Neiman painting Mark Spitz and trying to make him look sexy.
I had all of those placemats.
But when you're not in that world, when you have 150 other entertainment options in your pocket, suddenly you ask yourself, how much do I want to watch tape-delayed badminton right now?
But don't you still want to see France defeated? I mean, isn't that still a thing that globally is true, that everyone wants to see France get it handed to them?
I wonder if it's kind of the decline of patriotism in general. You know, among right-thinking Americans, there's something a little off about all that rah-rah red, white, and blue stuff.
But even among nationalists and fascists,
they don't want to see the global aspect of the Olympics. Right. They don't want to see the doves and the olive branch.
Or risk being, you know, at risk actually losing.
Losing to them. And the blue states don't want to, you know, think there's something a little off-putting about all the NBC packages about how we're going to defeat the... And you're right, there's no good bad guy except the French.
Right. And yeah, you're right. All of the West Coast liberals don't like hearing the national anthem played that much.
But Seattle has hosted, not an Olympics, but an awful off-brand Olympics.
Oh, I remember. Barely.
Yeah, it was like, you know, even in the Seattle Times sports page, I'm sure it was like 6A. No, wait, what was sport? 6C?
6C, yeah. I never got that far. When I realized I was in the sports section, I kept going.
When you know, somewhere after the baseball box scores and the Tacoma Rainiers versus Eugene Emeralds highlights, I'm sure they had what was going on in Husky Stadium in 1990 when Seattle hosted the Goodwill Games,
but
the
you
subject
weren't,
of today's show.
You weren't here then, were you?
I was here that summer. 1990, I would have been in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, I spent the summers in Seattle, and I have zero cultural, I have very little cultural memory of the Goodwill Games existing at all, which is what makes it such a perfect omnibus topic. When Jack, our supporter, suggested this idea along with a few others, I thought, yes. I think what he said was 1980s Olympics knockoffs or off-brand Olympics or something.
There were more than the Goodwill Games?
I mean, kind of. There are a bunch of other world multi-sport competitions that are not Olympics. Do you have, are any of them on your radar?
Yeah, the World Cup in skiing is arguably the competition.
Sure, I mean, every sport has one, but I mean a big multi-sport thing.
Oh.
Where there's skiing and curling, or there's archery and yachting. Are any of these on your radar?
Pan American Games.
Exactly. Some are regional, like the U.S. plays in the Pan American Games. When I, you know, I was living in Seoul in 88 when Korea hosted the Olympics, and that was its big...
Did you go?
Its big moment. Yeah, I went to a few different events. And saw the rest on TV.
I've never been.
Ahmad Rashad, like three blocks from my house, doing a stand-up for NBC Sports.
I'd never been. When the Olympics were in Calgary, I was in Spokane, and it was possible to, sure, you know, make the road trip. And I think I was just like, I put my bong down for a second. I was like, whoa.
But 2 years before Korea hosted the Olympics, they had been awarded the Asian Games, which is kind of the continental games for Asia. I think because they already had, you know, they were already building the infrastructure. Why not get it done 2 years, get the stadiums done 2 years sooner? And
right.
And have the, so that's when I first became aware that there were all these little regional sub-Olympics, the Caribbean Games and the South American Games and so forth.
Can you imagine if the Asian Games were held in South America and the South American Games were held in Asia?
Just as a prank?
I just feel like...
As a bit?
Why not? I mean, it's a global economy.
Some of them are language-based, believe it or not. Oh. There's a Francophone Games. If you were ever wondering if Sierra Leone could defeat French Guiana.
Right. Tahiti against...
At skeet shooting.
So against Quebec.
There's a Lusophone Games, by the way. A lot of these have recently been... If you look all these up, you find it's very sad. A lot of them have recently been canceled for the pandemic. Like the Mozambique Lusophone Games may get rescheduled, may get relocated in Sao Tome, or they may not. I mean, hard to say what the way forward is for our great Portuguese-speaking athletes.
Yeah, I feel like Portugal hasn't yet really gotten their comeuppance for their colonial misadventures. I feel like the Lusophone Games, they're going to turn.
What are you going to do? You're going to go stage some kind of a attack on the Lusophone Games? But then it won't be in the perpetrator's living room. It won't be in the master's house in Lisbon or whatever. Like all the games are always going to be in Recife, Brazil or
right. Or somewhere else in Brazil.
Or elsewhere in Brazil. Yeah, Brazil must clean up at the loser. Can you imagine an athletic competition where it's Brazil versus basically Portugal, Angola, Mozambique, and Goa, India? I mean, who's going to ever beat Brazil at any sport, right?
It does feel like they have a lock on some sports.
And I bet the Brazil TV deal is what keeps the Lusophone Games going. Sometimes it's historical allegiances, like famously the Commonwealth Games. Are you aware of
that? Yeah, I remember Commonwealth Games.
I was wondering, is the Commonwealth Games going to survive all these Caribbean countries disaffiliating from the Queen?
But how many countries, we talked about this on the cricket episode, like basically you can dissolve the Commonwealth, but there's still the Commonwealth of cricket countries.
Right.
Right, and if you're
the sports looking, federations outlast the
yeah. If you're looking for someone to play cricket against, you cannot. You know, the Bahamas aren't going to be able to say, "Well, we're on our own now."
As long as TV viewers want a Commonwealth Games, you're right. Belize is going to keep playing Kenya, but we don't know how long that's going to last. There's also the Bolivarian Games, which is only for countries. Not just in South America, but countries that were liberated by Simón Bolívar.
Really? There's a whole set of games.
From Panama all the way to Ecuador.
And do they do like Simón Bolívar themed events?
Sadly, no. Oh. I think they just do soccer and fencing and all the boring multi-sport
They don't
Olympic
like
stuff.
March on one another?
There is a set of games, just to jump ahead to one of the weirder ones, there is a set of games that only does sports that are not in the Olympics.
Oh,
the World Games, which began in 1981 in beautiful Santa Clara, California, athletes only compete in sports that are not in the Olympics. And as soon as the Olympics pick up taekwondo or bowling or whatever it is, it gets dropped from the World Games.
So like hoeing a field or...
Some of them are very much more like activities than sports. There's a breakdancing medal.
Huh.
There's a miniature golf medal at the World Games.
Okay.
I mean, 2020...
Watch this.
Let's see, the 2022 games are going to be in Birmingham, England. this July. So maybe we should go.
Birmingham.
And Chengdu, China has already been awarded the 2025 World Games. Where, you know, all so all these non-Olympic sports and sports in quotes, sumo, orienteering, parkour, kickboxing, weirdly, American football.
Oh, sure.
Not an Olympic sport, but certainly one that other countries are welcome to attempt.
Well, baseball too, or is that an Olympic sport now?
Baseball is at least, I think it exhibition was an exhibition. Sport. I think now it might be a medal sport. The most recent World Games in Wrocław, Poland, I'm sure I'm saying that wrong, the former Breslau, the United States bronzed in American football.
Believe it or don't.
Lost to both Germany and France, those gridiron powerhouses.
I was trying to explain to my daughter the other day how you could judge parkour and how you could win at parkour.
Is it by not falling off the building like Moon Knight?
It must be style points, right? I mean, and she, because she's fascinated, like, what is parkour? And I was like, well, have you watched a movie? I mean, I don't let her see any movies that have parkour in it because they also
tend to have swearing and sex, or just to avoid corrupting the youth with parkour.
It just feels like anytime you see parkour, it's also
going to be... If Daniel Craig's on a roof,
yeah,
there's also going to be...
I personally love the sport, but as I was trying to explain it to her, I was like, well, it's about going through town unconventionally. She was like...
You mean on a bus?
What? but I love that it's a... like proto-Olympic sports. So those World Games, did they also used to have some of these sports that have only just recently appeared in Olympics?
Yeah, like once rhythmic gymnastics left the Olympics, they're back here. Trampolining was a thing before the Olympics adopted it. I'm trying to see other sports that have been moved. Rugby, before the Olympics got it.
Olympics have rugby now.
The triathlon. The tug of war since the Olympics dropped it. Tug of war has not been an Olympic sport since 1920 and only a Squid Game sport since 2021.
Wait a minute. X Games. How am I not thinking of X Games?
Right. So some of them have different kinds of sports like the X Games. By the way, there was a big, getting back to the Bolivarian Games for one more second, there was a big to-do a few years ago over whether Chile could enter, even though they're from the same region.
But
freed by Bernardo O'Higgins, not Simón Bolívar.
And it would be harder to have O'Higginsian games
because it would just be Chile.
And so did they let
Chile has been allowed.
Oh, that's nice.
The early Soviet bloc, I mean, before there was a Soviet bloc, there was a socialist games called the Spartakiad. Uh-huh. We've talked on the show, I think, before about how the world communist movement loves Spartacus. Bolsheviks be loving Spartacus.
Yeah, for sure.
So they had a Spartakiad.
He's completely consistent with Marxism.
He's a slave that rose up. Yeah. And then he was protected by the masses who rose up to pretend to be him. Often these games are for communities. That's why there's a Paralympic Games and a Special Olympics. But also, less famously, there's a Gay Games.
I did not know that. Not on NBC, I'm guessing.
No. The Gay Games must be televised. They're probably on Logo or Out or some network I'm making up. What are the LGBT TV networks?
I would love to watch the Gay Games.
I wonder if they're on TV. I mean, I'm sure you can stream them now. The last Gay Games were in Paris in 2018. Oh, Hong Kong, Guadalajara in 2020. They do seem to be kind of in places where you'd want to have a fun, you know, the Palm Springs. The Palm Fire Springs Island. The Fire Island Gay Games.
There's a summer and a winter Gay Games?
No, apparently not. They're all in warm weather climes.
That's too bad.
Oh, I say they're all in fun gay destinations. No, the 2014 Gay Games in Cleveland, Akron, where you could not pay any of my gay friends to vacation.
You can have fun in Akron. You go, you know, the Goodyear blimp. It goes up, it goes down.
There's a Maccabiah Games for Jewish athletes worldwide, mm-hmm. Which usually in Tel Aviv, Israel, and now seems to always be in Jerusalem, maybe in a political statement.
Why is it not in White Springs?
Yeah, Queens. There's the World Masters Games for athletes of a certain age.
Middle, okay.
It's like the what the seniors tour, I guess. But the age depends on the sport, and in some cases, it's as low as 25 would be your age minimum.
Well, you know, there was always a seniors ski league in where I grew up, and seniors was this. It was awesome to watch because they were all these guys that had kind of aged out of whatever USSA. And they were sometimes incredible skiers, you know, that just were in their 40s. And
it's not, it seems like skiing, you'd hold up pretty well relative to, say, the 100 meter dash.
Here's the thing. My dad kept ski racing into his 80s. And he kept competitively, you know, like entering these races. And because he was in his 80s, he was in an age bracket that only had a couple of people. And so he consistently won first place in his age bracket in the race. And they awarded him a gold medal each time. And so by the time he stopped skiing, he had a very large box full of gold medals and ski trophies. And I inherited them when he died. And I don't know what to do with them. Because I don't want to take this box of gold medals to the thrift store. I felt like when I was King Neptune that I should have just put them all
these meaningless seniors medals.
Yeah, so I looked like a North Korean general, but they all had pictures of skis on them, and it wouldn't have really
see. There's a summer vibe.
Yeah, it wouldn't have withstood the close scrutiny
of the world press.
So I don't know what to do with them. I for a while I thought I would send one each to my Patreon subscribers. Maybe we should do it here. Send them to the omnibus. Like,
if you give at the very old skier level,
everybody gets one.
The bristlecone pine tier. Hey, at 80, your dad's probably older, possibly, than the pine tree that killed Sonny Bono. He's a cagey veteran.
Yeah. No, for sure.
He can outsmart that tree.
He escaped the tree.
I'm now reading up on the gay games. Instead of a torch, they have a flame, which I don't know if that's in very good taste.
I mean, how much of it is tongue-in-cheek?
The games are open to all who wish to participate without regard to sexual orientation. That's very open.
Sure, you would feel weird about like making somebody prove anything.
Right, how would that even work? I mean, at the Maccabi games and the World Masters games, maybe there's options, but a little tricky at the gay games. But this does kind of short-circuit my idea for kind of an awful throwback regressive 80s comedy about an athlete who's not good enough for the Olympics and decides to pull a Jack Tripper and pretend to be gay to enter the gay games.
I feel like that might be a scene in Revenge of the Nerds.
It's true, like, that all,
which doesn't really make it to the present day.
Do you remember when all hit comedies had to have at minimum 6 or 7 terrible gay or trans panic jokes?
For sure.
Yeah. And we were all just like, oh, I guess that's how movies are.
Well, and also there was always at least one Asian character who was played by Mickey Rooney.
It was not a good time. But I feel like you could make the gay games movie today, but it would have the athlete coming around at the end. You know, there could be an Israeli movie about a goyish athlete who pretends to be Jewish to get into the Maccabi games, and then he loses his anti-Semitism.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Or the athlete here who comes to love the fun gay scene in Cleveland, Akron.
Right, he joins because he really hates...
Here's how it works. He's some homophobic jock. He couldn't get in the Olympics. He accidentally maybe enters the gay games, like that boat trip movie.
Okay, there's an accidentally, or there might be a thing where he needs to win a medal in order to
inherit his uncle's fortune.
His uncle's fortune, exactly.
But
it's his uncle that's a homophobe.
That's right.
Right.
And then at the end, he has to stand up to his homophobic uncle because he's made friends with all the with all the cool
he's
LGBT
got it,
athletes.
But the problem with that is that implying that only a straight guy could win at the gay Olympics.
Right.
Well,
so there definitely has to be a scene where they're all amazing athletes and they really need to help him. Like without their, you know, not just queer, all their queer eye coaching, like he becomes medal worthy at the gay games.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you could do this and stay on the right side of it.
I feel like it.
Somebody listening to this needs to
write that screenplay.
Pitch this with Will Ferrell's a little too old for it, but the games get weirder even than the world games. There are the island games for countries that happen to be islands.
Oh, so any island.
Yes, Bermuda can face off against the...
Madagascar.
Most of them tend to be European islands, although you know, that seems to be just for cultural reasons. There's no reason why Fiji, I think, couldn't enter the island games. But really, who cleans up here seems to be like the Channel Islands. The Jersey and the Isle of Man have more gold medals than any of their, you know, any of the entrants from Malta. Iceland enters, Prince Edward Island. This appears to be kind of a Commonwealth game for athletes who are from little islands. Oh, and the Scandinavian islands, like Fruya, Norway, and Gotland, Sweden, do very well.
I feel like this is ridiculous.
Yes.
That is the correct. Channel Islands could clean up. Is it, are the competitions like, have your own dialect?
The island of Jersey, the crown dependency of Jersey, has 593 gold medals lifetime at the island games. Whereas Iceland, an actual country, has only 50. Malta, an actual country, has only 6.
I don't believe that this is a real game.
Rhodes entered 3 or 4 times and did fairly well.
I feel like New Zealand could enter, but do we consider Australia an island?
Nowhere in the Southern Hemisphere appears to enter. Bermuda is the closest thing to even a Caribbean nation.
We need to jump on this island games thing and start raising a fuss and say, no, it should be all islands.
And if you don't have steel drums, maybe you're not a great island.
Cuba, I think, is
good. Cuba would win every... Can you imagine the Cuban marathoner against the island of Jersey top finisher, who is just some wiry 51-year-old letter carrier?
Right.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Of all these odd games, we're going to tell the story of the short-lived Goodwill games. The Olympics were in crisis long before 2022, John. In December 1979, we all remember where we were when the Soviets invaded Afghanistan.
Yep.
It's not well remembered now, but a lot of the initial response, you know, because the Moscow Olympics was coming up in 6 months, a lot of the initial response was, well, we must cancel or postpone the Olympics. We need to use this as a bargaining chip. We need to try to get the Olympics out of Moscow.
We're always trying to sanction the Russians when they invade a neighboring country.
It's what we love to do.
Because we're always afraid of confronting them with arms because they're, you know, they're the baddies.
Do you think in 1979 there were a bunch of TV hosts who were like, no fly zone over Kabul?
I mean, it's so tricky because we were only 5 years out of Vietnam.
Yeah.
And hard to stand on our high horse about it. But I remember it so clearly. We were excited about the 1980 games because the 76 games were about the biggest thing that had happened. I mean, I was 8 years old and couldn't have been more glued to the TV through the 76 games. So the 80 games were coming. And it
the
was 80 just
games
like,
were a result of the 70s era detente, you know, kind of a cultural thawing between the East and the West. So this was a hopeful moment.
Yeah, we were going to have this big, you know, I mean, it was the Olympic Games where we were going up against our chief rivals.
And they'd already announced kind of a tit for tat games in Los Angeles the following Olympiad 4 years later. This was going to be good. And then it all went to hell.
Because of Afghanistan.
Well, don't blame them.
Well, no, I mean, Afghanistan is the shoal against which all empires crash.
Against which Andre Gromyko crashes. In the end, predictably, Jimmy Carter chooses the symbolic no-fly zone of boycotting the 80 games.
It's my one complaint with the Carter administration.
We should have gone to the Moscow Games.
I celebrate their entire catalog, but I feel like the Olympic Games should be sacrosanct.
I like how there's a they to you. It's not just Carter. It's
Fritz Mondale, Brzezinski.
Cyrus Vance, Zbigniew Brzezinski. Interestingly, not everybody boycotted. I mean, a couple other big allies did. Canada, West Germany, Japan.
Suck-ups.
Many, the ones who needed those favorable trade deals, I guess.
At that point, West Germany and Japan had a lot of American military bases still.
That's right. And of course, in 1984, the Soviets cited unspecified security concerns and did their own retaliatory boycott of our Olympics, even though we had not invaded any Central Asian powers. We'd barely invaded Grenada, John.
They were afraid of East LA, I think.
You think that's what it was?
Compton.
Security concerns being always code for racism.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. But it was this perfect storm of these 2 years where the Olympics had been given for the first time in decades to the Russians and the Americans, the superpowers, and both got screwed up. There was an interregnum, as we say, of almost 12 years where the two greatest
dominant sports countries,
athletic powers, had not faced off head to head. And it was terrible for the Olympics, terrible for their prestige and their ratings. It was even bad for the countries involved. Like, East Germany had already announced at the time our story begins that they were not going to boycott in 88, no matter what the Moscow told them, because they were their own man and they had a massive steroid machinery that they were not going to see wrecked by superpower posturing.
Right.
They were principled.
In 1988, who would have thunk that East Germany even had a year left of being a country?
Honecker was still walking tall, his chest puffed out with pride. But if you remember at this time, there was a lot of, oh no, the Seoul Olympics, you know, which superpower is going to like throw a temper tantrum about this one. And into this arena of tension and sadness and possibly, could this be the end of the Olympics in global sport, steps a man, a mustachioed man.
Tell me more.
Named Ted Stalin? Turner.
Oh, even better.
Steps the ghost of Joseph Stalin.
It's Ted Turner, who at the time was at the peak of his game, right?
Yeah.
Was he yet married to Jane Fonda?
He was, I believe. I mean, I think for a while they were partners. When did Ted Turner marry?
I thought you were going to say Jane partiers, Fonda. And I was going to go, yes, they were.
They did not marry until 1991, but I think they were a couple through much of the 80s, right? That's my memory of it.
Mm-hmm.
And which makes this whole thing crazy, because we need to explain to futurelings that we're now living in an age of these kind of Bond villain billionaires who all have a global scheme.
You're talking about now.
Now.
Yeah.
In our time, in 2022.
All have a scheme to escape the globe.
They all have their doomsteads in New Zealand, but also they all have global concerns.
Right.
Right? Even the so-called good ones, your Gateses and your Buffetts. For centuries, that is not how rich people acted. Rich people, generally it was like smaller time cranks and ministers who got really into vegetarianism or world peace or whatever it was. The rich just wanted to have their names on a lot of libraries and dormitories.
Hear, hear.
And Ted Turner is really where that changes. Politically, he's a little hard to pin down. He was a young Republican as a kid, but the older he got, the more he got concerned with, the more money he got, the more he kind of realized that with a rich man's ego comes big global concerns. And that meant things that traditionally would be associated with the left. The environment, the Amazon rainforest, nuclear weapons and the threat they pose.
When did CNN debut?
CNN went on the air on June 1st, 1980. And this is when Ted Turner becomes a global figure, because he is very much for almost a decade a regional big man, the equivalent of a car dealership guy. He was an Atlanta radio magnate who decided the future was, and I think we could all agree, UHF stations.
Hear, hear.
He branched out into UHF feeling that as people wanted more and more TV options, Channel 26 was going to be viable, you know, and as long as you had content to show on it. And he actually bought rights to the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta Hawks so he would have something to show. And then he bought the Atlanta Braves and the Atlanta Hawks so he would have something to show on his little TV channels. And in 1976, the watershed moment, he gets the FCC to approve his use of satellite technology for his little Atlanta area UHF network. And suddenly he can start offering this programming, which tends to be sitcom reruns and Braves games, to stations all over the country.
This is TBS.
This becomes the superstation TBS.
And there were some superstations out of New Jersey, right? WOR, I guess that was a radio station.
WGN in Chicago. But I believe this all follows Turner's brainstorm that a small local UHF guy can leverage this new satellite tech.
There was one in Boston.
We've talked about this on the Omnibus before, and I can't remember which show it was.
Zoom. Zoom, 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 Zoom.
We actually never did a show about Zoom. We just talk about it.
We should talk about Zoom.
We should do Zoom for sure. Maybe it was the Mexican goat glands radio magnet. Is that what we did?
Okay, maybe.
I can't remember. Anyway, as his aspirations grow, as he starts to become a national, international figure, he decides there's an audience for a, you know, satellite gives you real time. It's insane that people are still getting their news twice a day when a paper gets thrown against their door or Walter Cronkite deigns to tell them something.
Not quite insane, thinking back.
Do you think
I feel like
it turned out to be the one thing keeping us sane.
That's all you need, really. The news once a day.
It's better, right? Do you think we should bring this back? Let's pick a time a day. You're still going to get your news from your phone, but let's pick a time a day when you look.
When everybody looks.
Everybody looks at once at... You don't want to compete with the olds watching the national newscast. You want to beat them. So before the nightly news. Maybe the hour that a paper boy would have thrown you a paper.
Here's my question to you. If you wake up in the morning and look at the news first thing, does it make your day better or worse?
Worse every day.
Worse every day.
Today I found out Bruce Willis has aphasia.
No.
I went to bed last night not even worried that Bruce Willis might have aphasia.
Oh, dear.
And today, it's now making me feel bad. And things I would not even known about, you know, like some Ohio Supreme Court decision that's going to screw up redistricting. Never would have even known about it 5 or 10 years ago.
Right.
Today, it just makes me sad for a week because I know what that'll do to the House of Representatives.
I woke up this morning and Yahoo News wanted me to vote on whether on which person I wanted to host Jeopardy. And I tried to vote.
For Mayim Bialik, several times.
I'm not going to reveal my vote. It's a secret ballot. I tried to vote, and then Yahoo News was like, just enter your email address, and we'll count your vote. And I was like, this isn't news. Why does it have news in the name? This is just more.
A lot of it still is hard news, but it's day ruining to have it all in real time. But Ted Turner thought, let's give it to everyone in real time. And
do you remember the first time you saw CNN?
Yeah, I do. It was headline news, actually.
Headline news, right.
With David Goodnow. I can name the anchor.
Yeah.
I think he passed away a few years ago. It was a big deal where I was in South Korea, particularly because we really were getting like canned news from staff sergeants in uniform with a journalism or broadcasting degree, probably, or not, just kind of struggling their way through prompter. And then local East Asian weather. So it was a big deal to actually have graphics and Chiron and real-time updates. And it was, I think it was a big deal in the U.S. too, although not for the same weird reasons. The CNN came on the air on June 1st, 1980, and Ted Turner becomes a global figure. And he's also, because he's also interested in the sports world, you know, he's bought the Braves and the Hawks, just have something to show on his TV station.
And he's a big deal in Atlanta. He's like Cal Worthington. Except he has his own station, right? He's a big wheel there.
Think how big it would weird to be today, by the way, if CNN, the big globalist news outlet that, you know, probably crazies don't trust, is also owned by the husband of the most hated figure on one side of the political spectrum. For like, the guy's literally taking Jane Fonda to the Oscars every year.
And she sat on a cannon in North Vietnam.
Today it would be like, you know, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez's hypothetical husband founds a...
Right, owns the New York Yankees.
No, like founds a news outlet.
Oh.
But back then there was very little, maybe because it was such an incremental thing, there was very little...
Sense that the news CNN was super
is the
biased.
Fake, CNN is the fake news, yeah. You know? I mean, there is today for sure.
Well, again, because cranks and crackpots didn't have their own way of communicating.
They just had their little mimeographed zines.
Yeah.
And everything was better.
They went back to work in the morning and yelled at the water cooler and the world got on with it.
This is also an era, I think, to provide a little context of specifically rich people thinking that the sports institutions of the time should be challenged.
Huh?
That the NFL and the NBA and hockey should not have their monopolies, for example. And that's how you get the AFL in the 60s, the ABA in 1967, the World Hockey Association in the middle late 70s.
This was what rich people wanted? Because they have very different needs now.
Well, it was an ego thing.
I mean,
somebody's got to bankroll these things. And Donald Trump owned a USFL team in the early 80s. You know, this was a... We're kind of getting into the era of, well, why don't you buy a real sports team?
Oh, because nobody, it's not like just any billionaire could buy a Major League Baseball team.
Who can who can stand up to the NFL or the sports powerhouses? You know, it's going to take...
Apparently these guys from Oklahoma City can stand up to the NBA, take our beloved, whatever they were called, the Sonics.
There we go. Name for the band, probably. So there's precedent at this point for private citizens saying, you know what? There shouldn't just be one hockey league. There should be us too. Is Amazon singing to you? Amazon, that just means you got a delivery, right?
I guess so. Why did it
do Amazon sings? Maybe you got three deliveries.
three deliveries all at once? I hate technology.
So in this world where we're standing up to sports monopolies, why should there just be one Olympics, John? Why should the Olympics get all the glory?
Because it's in the very
it's
idea.
Ancient? It's ancient and iconic?
Well, it's just there. You have one thing where the countries compete. Otherwise, it becomes diffuse enough that nothing matters, right?
Except that, as we've said, there are dozens of these other things.
Like, why even are there a Golden Globes? Like, what are the Golden Globes? Now, you will know this. What are the Golden Globes that are not the Oscars? What about them is not encompassed by the Oscars?
They also give TV awards. So I think they can say, oh, we're actually for multiple media.
I see.
We're the Oscars and the Emmys. But really, it's they just got a TV deal, and that made them look prestigious. And they were the last one. They scheduled themselves right before the Oscars, so they're kind of like the Iowa primary of the Oscars.
Right, right,
or the Iowa caucus, which makes them seem important for prognosticators. But the fact is, it was always the Hollywood Foreign Critics Association, like a very small group of, you know, 58 randos kind of picking Oscar frontrunners, and it made no sense.
You could have EGOT have two extra G's.
For a Golden Globe?
EGOT.
Or that could replace the Grammy, you know, kind of an EGOT asterisk for people who don't get the Grammy.
Listen, no. The Grammy is like the tentpole of an EGOT.
You should look at the list of people who have Grammys.
Well, the thing is, it's an Oscar.
I've been nominated for a Grammy, if that tells you how diffuse it is.
I know how ding-a-ling it is, because I have three or four friends that have best packaging Grammys. But, but you know, an Emmy, an Oscar, and a Tony are all acting awards. So you need the Grammy to have it be diverse at all.
That's true. I mean, Tony has singing in it, but often.
Sometimes.
What Ted Turner tells the world is, look, it doesn't make sense for there to be only one of these every 4 years. Sure, in 1908, it would take the world's best athletes
4 years to get there by ship.
Exactly, because they're all white men from Western Europe. They all have to take a tramp steamer and then get on some kind of a locomotive to get to St. Louis. It doesn't make sense anymore. In a global satellite age, there could be an Olympics-like event every 2 years. There's got to be an appetite for it. And you know what? I have the TV stations that will have to air it. So, and this is a time when the Olympics seem like they might have taken a serious enough hit,
right,
that the Goodwill Games, as he announces them to be called, could take center stage.
Now, were the Olympics a for-profit enterprise?
No. I mean,
but the Goodwill Games,
it's up to the individual cities and committees.
But the Goodwill Games were going to be owned by a person.
They're a co-venture between Ted Turner's own TBS and his Soviet partners. He makes diplomatic inquiries of the Soviet government, and they are happy to stick it to the Olympic movement at this point.
Sure.
So he gets a deal with Gostel Radio, the Soviet broadcasting apparatus, and Soyuz Sport, their big athletic federation. And he announces a partnership that will have, for the first time in 12 years, American and Soviet athletes will face off, and the whole world, something the Olympics have not been able to deliver since Montreal.
And how did Ronald Reagan feel about it?
Ronald Reagan refuses to allow... I mean, it's tricky how people react to this, because the Soviets are very gung-ho about it. So even the IOC, watching this competitor stand up, you know, Juan Antonio Samaranch himself cannot say, these are dingbats, don't you dare come for the Olympics. He has to placate the Soviets, because he needs them in 88.
Right.
So he has to say, oh, great, you guys are having these games. And Turner decides to host his inaugural games in Moscow. which makes it a little touchy for a Reagan evil empire spouting administration. You know, this does seem a little off-putting, and there are conspiracy theories, you know, about
what conspiracy theories, Ken,
and not just on the right, but you know, big papers are running editorials calling Ted Turner a pawn of the Kremlin,
okay,
for giving international communism a stage on the American TV dial.
Right,
you can see how this would play out. I mean, the U.S. government, I don't think, officially does anything to discourage these games, because that would be a bad look. Because this is kind of a hands across the sea, we're going to release doves. I mean, the opening ceremonies have a tribute to Samantha Smith, for crying out loud.
But you could see how a typical American teenager watching the Soviet shot putters might think, Marxism.
Exactly. Like, if capitalism is so superior,
yeah,
why aren't our roided out athletes able to hurl a discus or hammer that far? That's a fair point. But Turner says, no, like, this is, you know, this is actually going to be the olive branch that ends the Cold War. You really ought to see my relations with the Soviets, he says. It's funny how much he sounds like Trump. It would blow your mind. I'm going to have a meeting with Gorbachev, probably.
Whoa, probably.
This is what he told. And you can totally read this in Trump's voice. This is billionaire on suddenly on the world stage voice, except Turner's an actual, you know, centimillionaire or whatever at this time. And all the big stars. Oh, sorry, I didn't say what the actual thing the Reagan administration did, which is they did not allow military athletes to compete. They were like, this is not the Olympics.
Is that normally a thing?
Yeah, a lot of U.S. boxers, you know, a lot of U.S. sports have people who have come up through these military gaming, and particularly then when it was all amateur athletics.
Sure.
The military had a huge infrastructure for that, right?
And as we know, the Soviet military fields some pretty formidable boxers.
All these Ivan Drago-looking guys. Yeah. Nikolai Volkov's playing the Volga boatman before their match starts. Probably an Iranian guy in their corner. So Reagan does not, and these military guys had always been able to box or whatever it is in the Olympics. But Reagan said, no, this is a for-profit thing. You know, a kind of thing you don't normally hear from a Republican administration.
Right.
This for-profit venture is not good. But that's because most of these for-profit guys are not dating Jane Fonda, right? So there's a big to-do at Lenin Stadium in Moscow, which gets aired all over the world, including on the Superstation, TBS. They get the three, and the theme is world peace. There's a tribute to the recently killed Samantha Smith, the little girl we've talked about, an omnibus who wrote the letter to, I think, Andropov.
Mm-hmm.
There's a cauldron and not a torch. So it's kind of
a little witchy
off-brand. Yeah, exactly. They're summoning kind of Wicca spirits of peace and goodwill. And the big kind of center stage is they get the astronauts and cosmonauts from the 1975 Apollo Soyuz link up.
How fun.
To enter the field and link up again symbolically.
They come from one side of the field and the other?
Making beeping noises.
Beep, beep, beep.
They have to say beep before they talk to the crowd. That's Roger. So the theme is very much, what if 70s era detente could continue into the mid 80s despite the Rambo rhetoric from Reagan and Andropov and Gromyko. And crucially, as I've alluded to before, by this time, Gorbachev is now general secretary. And this is now a younger, more vibrant, forward-looking Kremlin. It's not clear yet what's going to happen.
But Reza Gorbachev, am I right?
Oh, baby. Reza Gorbachev in the stands, maybe showing a little leg. Uh-huh. I don't know. We should do a show about the Nancy Reagan, Reza Gorbachev dynamic.
That
single-handedly ended the Cold War. Both of these leaders had kind of glamorous, fashionable wives for the first time in a long time in both countries, when you think about Pat Nixon and Brezhnev's wife.
Yeah, right. Although, you know,
you're going to defend Rosalind Carter, and that's fine.
Rosalind had a homespun charm.
She's a cute Southern belle.
Mm-hmm.
Who could deny it? But she wasn't wearing Oscar de la Renta.
No, true. Whatever. That's exactly right.
You know, nobody was worried about what Bob Mackie fashion Betty Ford was gonna be wearing.
I'm just Googling Rosalind Carter sexy. You know, you can always.
Of course you are, because it's 12:30 on a Wednesday, and that's what you always do.
If you put the word sexy at the end of Googling any person, you get really cool pictures.
It does keep feet from auto adding, which is which is what I always try to avoid. So there's 129 hours of this broadcast in the U.S. on 62 stations. All the big names are there. Carl Lewis, Edwin Moses, Jackie Joyner, I think sets a record in the heptathlon, beating her Olympic record.
Really?
Yeah.
Does Muhammad Ali appear at any point?
No. Muhammad Ali does not appear. But all the big Soviets are there too. Sergei Bubka, you know, all the guys who were, you know, just kings of their sport as well.
This is the leotard era.
Yes.
Yes.
All athletes. Do you remember Flojo and Jackie Joyner Kersee wearing some crazy designer,
yeah,
space age, next gen fabric leotard?
It was a big cool thing.
Big deal. And the Soviet men also. But despite the massive outpouring of Ted Turner's personal fortune, fewer than 1 million viewers.
What?
See
really?
Any of this?
No. I mean, I was in my senior year of high school. We had cable TV and it was a big deal.
Because all the ads nonstop on all of Turner's networks.
It was TBS and CNN, they were huge parts of my high school viewing. And I did not see a single moment of the Moscow Goodwill Games.
I think America can sense a Pepsi.
I see.
You know?
We're like, But Ted Turner was in all the newspapers then.
We've got the Olympics at home.
But I don't think I ever was like a Ted Turner acolyte. I always felt a little bit like,
Because of the mustache?
I don't know. He had this Elon Musk vibe where it was like, I don't know about you.
And he was the first of those guys. I think without Turner, we don't get even the good Gates and Buffett's doing their giving pledge and whatever. You know, billionaires who think they can save X, where X is the Amazon or the automotive industry or whatever it is. But Turner is undeterred and he goes on to hold 4 more of these things every 4 years, in off years from the Olympics. This later gets screwed up in the mid 90s when the Olympics decide to try to save the Winter Olympics by taking Avery Brundage's 70s era suggestion of moving the Winter Olympics to the non-quadrennial years.
Which I also think is bad.
Why?
I think the Olympics should be every 4 years.
Just to make the
winter
math easier?
Winter in the winter and summer in the summer.
They do come too often now, right?
It's sort of like, oh, it's another Olympics. It just feels like it was a special event every 4 years, which is exactly the amount of time. It's kind of like a pop song should be 3 minutes long, and Supreme Court justices should be appointed for life. And
no matter what their wives say or do.
There should only be 50 senators and the Olympics should be every 4 years.
It's kind of a throwback to this international geophysical year idea where it's like 1968 is the year of, and guess what? There's going to be a Winter Olympics in here and a Summer Olympics in Mexico City. And now it's much more like every time you turn around, there's an Olympics coming. And the only question is it the good kind or the curling kind?
So Ted Turner did the same thing, split it up, and then now it was every 2 years instead of 4?
No. Interestingly, in the 1990 Seattle Games, he realized that there were winter games that were a draw. So he decided to have some of them too. The 1990 Goodwill Games, awarded to Seattle, but also Spokane and Tacoma, had ice skating in addition to all the hoopla with, you know, especially swimming, Matt Biondi and Janet Evans trying to reenact their Seoul era glory, Oscar De La Hoya, boxing, you know, all the big names. Do you know where the opening ceremonies were? Do you remember?
Well, no, because 1990 was a weird year for me. I'd left Gonzaga in 89, so I wasn't in Spokane anymore. And I spent that whole year hitchhiking around America. I wasn't anywhere.
Where would you guess that they would hold the opening ceremonies in 1990 Seattle?
Pike Place Market. I don't know. Like, did they throw a fish through a hoop and that was how the game started?
Oh, my mistake. They did not even call it an opening ceremony. I think by this time they were scaling down and this was going to be a welcome, just so people didn't have the idea that it would have all the pomp and pageantry of an Olympics opening.
So it was like at Terminal A in the airport?
It was at Husky Stadium.
Really? Husky Stadium?
Yeah.
Was this before or after Husky Stadium collapsed on itself?
Ooh, when was that?
So Husky Stadium collapsed in 1987. So this was only...
This would have been 3 years after the rebuild.
3 years after the...
And the kingdom was not yet starting to collapse on people in 1990? No. We're getting close. We're getting close.
The tiles weren't falling on people, killing them.
The tiles are maybe hanging as if from pieces of chewing gum at this point.
I definitely think the perspiration was dripping from them mixed with cigarette smoke.
So at these welcome ceremonies, you know, much less pageantry than the Russian version, now that it's clear that, you know, a few hundred thousand Americans tops are going to watch this. They did get, the big guest was, instead of fish through a hoop, it was kind of a Native American tribes theme. No less than Billy Mills brought in a talking stick on which President Bush and it would have been Gorbachev, had both written messages of peace. If you remember the Native American tradition of
passing the talking stick around,
holding a stick to speak.
Yep.
Do you know who Billy Mills is? The movie Running Brave, yep, starring a very not Indian, Robbie Benson from, yeah, Ice Castle.
Right.
Nobody talks about how maybe Robbie Benson should not have, blue eyed Robbie Benson should not have played Billy Mills, but I'm going to be the first to cancel.
Should have been Robbie C. Thomas Benson. Howell.
Replace Robbie Benson in Beauty and the Beast, America. And again, there was ice skating. Because I think there was a big rivalry at this time. All the big Russian skaters, Kurt Browning, Christy Yamaguchi, Turner thought maybe that would give him some, and he wouldn't be competing against, an Olympics, because they couldn't, even the Olympics should not bring together a marathon and figure skating. That took Ted Turner. But the ratings, sadly, stayed low. And that was true again for the 1994 Goodwill Games that Yeltsin opened in St. Petersburg. The idea was to ping pong between the East and the West, I think. But the 1998 in New York City. But the problem is, of course, by the Seattle Games, the Goodwill Games have lost their raison d'etre.
There's no Soviets anymore.
Tragically, world Marxist-Leninism has collapsed, leaving only Cuba and North Korea behind to carry the torch, as it were.
Too many Christmas.
So there really is no East versus West bonding that Ted Turner can bring to the table here. And as a result, the 2002 games are in Brisbane, Australia, just in kind of an attempt to do something different. And also they get postponed till 2003, maybe to avoid a year in which there's a summer or a winter games. By this time, the Goodwill Games, which never really had their way, had lost it. They have lost probably about $150 million total.
Oof.
For Ted Turner's media empire over this time. And even worse, in 1996, he has sold Turner Media to Time Warner. And he talks a good game. Ted Turner says, you know what? The Goodwill Games are my baby. In fact, he takes credit for ending the Cold War. He says, you know, do you think it's a coincidence that the Berlin Wall fell just a mere 3 years after the Moscow Goodwill Games? So he publicly takes credit for,
He does. He's responsible.
Yes.
His detente.
His javelin throwing and archery competition and badminton games have led to the end of the Cold War. And he says he's going to keep bankrolling them indefinitely, even if Time Warner doesn't hold up their end of the deal. In fact, after the Brisbane Games, Time Warner announces that they're going to put their sporting resources, world sporting resources, into different avenues. And Ted Turner does not step forward and decide to keep to keep bankrolling a money hemorrhaging ego trip. And thus ends an idea that was born too late.
Yeah, you
know, a Goodwill Games around the time of the first boycott might have gotten a good head of steam, especially if the Soviets had picked that over the LA Games in 1984. But by 1986.
But even then, I mean, that would have seemed, I think starting a Goodwill Games then would have felt like very unpatriotic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And also maybe it's just a Pepsi in any generation. I mean, he tried this in the Pepsi generation and it didn't work. Maybe Americans are always suspicious of the off-brand thing because it just seemed, you know, we say we like an underdog, but really, do we? We like Levi's and Springsteen and Coke and you know, Ted Turner bought a wrestling, and despite all his high-minded, this is going to end the Cold War. I mean, this is a guy who needs sports because he needs something to show on TV. You know, he buys a wrestling federation to compete with Vince McMahon around this same time. And he buys an Olympic committee to compete with Juan Antonio Samaranch. You know, this is a guy who likes sports and is looking for a winner.
For me, it comes down to, like, if you, like, boycotting the Olympics in 1980 was mealy-mouthed in the same way that, like, if the United Nations is to function,
right,
we have to stick stick with it.
You don't walk out of the Security Council.
That's right. Through thick and thin. And you try to reform it. And there are always going to be people that say, well, you can't reform it. It's beyond reformation. But that's defeatist. And it's so easy to lose confidence in globalism, the good side of globalism, which is not to say like, let's close these factories and make stuff in a dumb place. But these things that maybe idealistically are trying to unite.
To bring about a new order of one world government.
A new order of one world government run by banks that are
not
headquartered under the North Pole.
Not by banks. By the Federation of Planets headquartered in San Francisco. This is a sunny version of this.
Okay. Good. But I just don't think, as soon as we boycotted the Olympics, the whole idea was forever
tainted.
Yeah, just hobbled. And it doesn't feel like, I don't know. I mean, if you think about 1980, right, the Winter Games in Lake Placid went ahead.
Do you know the conspiracy theory that the Soviets lost the hockey match on purpose in order to try to deter Carter from boycotting?
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that
I don't believe this for a second, but this is a common sports conspiracy theory.
That hockey victory was, you know, and still is, like a moment where...
High watermark for the Cold War.
Well, in the sense that America...
All the nuclear proliferation was worth it because we got that.
America got to be the underdog in that competition, that like scrappy underdogs that... And it's the only place in the world that America could have posited itself as the underdog in a competition. And yet we got to feel that whole, the pride is back.
I guess I take it back. We do like an underdog when it flatters us.
Yeah, right.
But also we like the big fancy brand, I think. This is just the generic food show again.
Yeah, we want the underdog to be South Vietnam.
Yeah, exactly. The ultimate irony is that today there is an Olympic stadium named for the great enemy of the Olympics, Ted Turner himself.
Where?
In Atlanta. The Atlanta Olympic Stadium is now the site of Turner Field, you know, named because of his ownership of the Braves.
The Braves still called the Braves? Are they the last of the Mohicans?
The Braves are still called the Braves. They have not changed. And I wonder if there's some kind of...
They haven't changed their name to the Atlanta baseball team?
I mean, they got rid of the Tomahawks and whatnot.
Okay.
But that's true. I think, let's see, wait, is Turner Field... Turner Field is, I think, where the... Turner Field, I think, is on the site of where the parking lot was for the Olympic Stadium after the Braves left for the suburbs.
I see.
But yeah, Ted Turner outlasted, not only did he outlast the Olympics crisis, he got his name on the building.
Gorbachev's still alive too. Might be a race to the finish.
Do you think they hang out? Do you think to this day Turner's like, I'm still going to hang out with Gorbachev, probably.
Probably. And that concludes the Goodwill Games. Entry 539.EP0607. Certificate number 21182. In the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram archive our tweets at Omnibus Project. They archive Ken's tweets at Ken Jennings, and they archive some selection of my tweets at John Roderick. They're only the best tweets. You can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can hang out with other futurelings by Googling the word futurelings. It will almost certainly pull up Omnibus fans, and you can socialize with them on TikTok and Telegraph, Spark,
CNN Headline News,
and Kaburp, and all the other social media spots that are trying to replace Twitter. You can support the show, and this show was a Patreon supporter choice. At which level is the suggestion show suggestion?
That's
level?
Jack gave it the Washing Bear tier
for
6 months, and was able to send us a list of ideas for shows, all of which I liked, but I like the Goodwill Games most of all.
So go to patreon.com/omnibus. go to patreon.com/omnibusproject and join the legion of futurelings who are supporting the show.
If the show means something to you, that's how you show your support.
And you can send us mail, actual mail. We're recording the show today. The table here is topped by a super cool spongy game board top that was given to us by an Omnibus fan.
Are we going to shoot craps later?
It fits this table perfectly, and it really feels like we are playing high stakes poker here, which we are. You can send things to us at P.O. Box 55744, Shoreline, Washington, 98155. It looks like you've got some mail there, Ken.
Yeah, Mindy hit the mailbox this week. I don't know if this counts as omnibus mail because I think it's only addressed to me, but I do get to bring a plus one, so I guess we could both come to Nathan and Carly's wedding. Oh, by the time this airs, it happened in late May.
Oh, where was the wedding?
Newmarket, Ontario.
Oh.
Do you want to go to a Canadian wedding?
They're trying to win you over to the Canadian side.
That's true. And vaccinations are required.
Or at least they were.
Oh, if we wish to give a gift, we will gratefully accept a small contribution. Should we send them a wedding present, John?
Yeah, we should send them some of my dad's ski gold medals.
That's what they're going to get. Congratulations on your special day, Nathan and Carly. We also got a postcard from Ranger Michael at Glacier Bay National Park.
Okay.
I mean, Michael appears to be writing us from Maine, but I guess during the summers.
He works at Glacier Bay.
He works in Alaska.
I'm sorry, not Glacier Bay, Glacier National Park.
Well, no, Glacier Bay National Park. There's both.
Isn't Glacier Bay in Alaska?
Yeah, but it's a national park.
Oh, so he works at Glacier Bay.
He works
Bay.
At the Alaskan one.
Oh, good. Okay.
Maybe it's a franchise?
Uh-huh. Yeah, they have them in Brazil. They have them throughout South America, different Glacier National Parks.
He just listened to the Nudie Suits, and Trini sent us a postcard showing country and western star Kid Cantwell in front of his famous Pontiac wearing an amazing nudie suit. And I guess his Pontiac is famous because it's encrusted with 6,000 silver dollars and 12 solid silver Winchester rifles, which makes it the heaviest Pontiac ever driven.
Wow, heaviest Pontiac.
What a record. Wouldn't you love to be in the Guinness Book for owning the world's heaviest Pontiac?
I kind of would.
I think I'm going to put 13 solid silver Winchester rifles on my Pontiac just to piss off this guy.
He's got a beautiful blue nudie, though.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for sending that, Michael. If we're in Glacier Bay, we'll look you up. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long this era of our civilization survived. We hope and pray that the catastrophe fear may never come, but if the worst comes soon, this time capsule recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word. But if providence allows, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.